Let's continue with our look at Grand Rapids in 1902 as the paper mill is completed and production begins. In 1956, Ella Sisler of Grand Rapids took a University of Minnesota Extension History class titled Minnesota and the Northwest, and as a course requirement, she wrote a term paper. She began with a brief sketch of early Grand Rapids based primarily on a perusal of newspapers, and then devoted most of the text to a recounting of interviews she had conducted with women who were longtime Grand Rapids residents. Well, let's take a look here at the lives of the women of Grand Rapids in 1902 and see how things are going with them. Mary Sawyer was married in her Indiana home and then accompanied her new husband to his Grand Rapids residence. They traveled by train, and upon leaving Duluth, encountered miles and miles of nothing but dead trees, the result of a recent forest fire. If there's nothing more than this in Grand Rapids, she warned her husband, I'm going back home to mother. But upon her arrival, she found the town quite nice, and especially liked the pine trees. I fell in love with them, and have loved them ever since. Her husband, George, was a carpenter specializing in hardwood finishing, and he worked in many of the houses built in Grand Rapids at the turn of the century. He also served as a lumberjack undertaker, receiving frozen bodies from the winter woods. After thawing and making preparations for burial, he provided one of his handmade coffins. In addition, Sawyer farmed 10 acres, and there he built a small house. Well, he was located on what today is the far northern edge of Grand Rapids, but that's a fair distance from downtown. And back when he had his place, there was not much between where they were and the downtown. It was still a pretty wild area. So Mary is spending her days alone, feeling far away from that town nestled by the river. She found living on the edge of the wilderness most unsettling. The Indians who passed by aroused no curiosity or interest for her, but seemed quite scary, as did also the rough lumberjacks and the wild animals. She also admitted to similar feelings when she did get into Grand Rapids, only to find numerous cows wandering all over the town. The Sawyers did well financially with the farm. George worked the land during the long summer evenings after his day of carpentry, but Mary continued to keenly feel the isolation. Her nearest neighbor seemed far away, especially so in the winter. Often her only entertainment was the daily arrival of two girls who came to fetch pails of milk. Well, at about the time the mill was beginning production, the Sawyers moved into Grand Rapids itself, into the downtown area. And shortly thereafter, George had to give up his carpentry career because of illness. He was able to remodel their new home to serve as a boarding house, and Mary faced a major challenge as she took up the fine art of cooking good food in quantity. The diminutive and frail Mrs. Sawyer found she liked the work, even though her days were long and arduous. Her reputation as an excellent cook kept the table full, elbow to elbow, and most probably some of the people at that table were working at the mill. The cost for three full meals per day, 7 days per week, was $20. If I didn't still have my books to show it, I wouldn't believe it now, she recounted in 1956. She couldn't resist adding that, even though she fed so many, she had certainly never purchased any groceries on a Sunday and had difficulty understanding why some 1950s Grand Rapids grocery stores were open on that day. Mary did her voluminous baking in a wood-fired stove and boasted she had never bought a loaf of bread. She avoided repeating menus on the same day of succeeding weeks and always looked for variety in her meals. German, Swedish, or Norwegian cooking was sometimes found on her usual lumberjack-style table. Learning of the first night school classes offered by the Grand Rapids High School, Mary thought she should broaden herself, and she signed up for typing and sewing. She did learn to type well enough to write a letter to her son, but preoccupied with planning menus, even as she sat in class, she wasn't so successful with the sewing. The teacher unceremoniously deposited the garment Mary had produced in the rag bag. Living in a cottage on Pokegama Lake in 1956, Mary Sawyer several times repeated as she mulled over her life in Grand Rapids, "We had good times in that old boarding house." So, a hard-working family and successful undertaking in Grand Rapids for them. Maddie Thwing secured a teaching position near Aiken in 1902, and the following year she accepted a job in Grand Rapids. She taught primary grades in the central school, first being assigned in the crowded building to a contrived classroom in the basement. So she's just a couple of blocks up from the paper mill in downtown Grand Rapids and close by it. As she thought in 1956 of her teaching years, she beamed with pleasure and recalled much fun. As a teacher, she had felt herself to be very much a part of the community, and she particularly remembered how frequently mothers were at the school visiting classrooms and taking part in various school activities. She was often invited to the homes of her pupils. The Central School teachers had a club that planned entertainments, which often centered about picnics, either at the Bokegama Dam or in the woods. Mrs. Thwing particularly recalled one winter outing with her students to gather pine boughs from the trees that grew near the school. Her classroom was liberally decked with the boughs, and a summer picnic was held in the dead of winter. Maddie was married to Alfred Thwing, a lawyer who played a large role in Grand Rapids, serving in public office and ending his career as a district judge. After she left her teaching career, Mrs. Thwing was active in the women's club and in her church, and she long served on the Grand Rapids Library Board. She gardened and birdwatched, and clearly expressed in 1956 her appreciation for the beauty of Grand Rapids. Quite a different lifestyle, quite a different life. Mrs. Maggie Seeley was born in the Mississippi River, a few miles below Grand Rapids. She was a full-blooded Chippewa Indian named Shoneance, later known as Bokegama Maggie. She married a Pennsylvania Dutchman who came into the country and worked among logging camps. To them was born a daughter, and when the daughter was 1 year old, the parents parted. Later, Mrs. Seeley married again, another white man, and most of their life was spent in moving from place to place around Grand Rapids, finding new fishing, hunting, and trapping grounds, or maple groves. In the spring, they would tap the maples and make syrup. There used to be regular villages of maple camps. Later came berry picking. They picked and dried all kinds of berries and packed them in birch bark boxes for their own winter use or for trade at the camps. When ice came on the lakes, they fished for whitefish, which they dried and smoked for winter use. They also trapped and hunted for meat. They would trade meat and fish to the camps for tea, sugar, and flour. Their early pleasure was dancing. They would travel many miles to attend a dance and learn the old-fashioned quadrilles and reels. The dances would be given at the camps, and almost everybody attended who could get there. Many of the young Indian girls married white men from these logging camps. Products for trade other than fish and meat were buckskin and beadwork. The Indian women did much work for the men in the camps, making buckskin, heavy jackets, and mackinaws. So, yeah, quite a different lifestyle for her, for sure. And once again, centering around hard work. A little short glimpse at another story. This is Hilda Poole. I first came to Grand Rapids in 1901. Relatives were supposed to meet me at the train depot, but somehow I missed them. I asked the way to their house, and with my baby in my arms, I started out. I didn't get very far before my relatives saw me and came running. They were horrified, saying, "My God, Hilda's walking down Whiskey Row." I had chosen the one street in Grand Rapids where women were never seen, and that was the last remnant, the old logging day saloon part of Grand Rapids. And we'll turn to Lawrence Rossman for one more look. He writes, "The Merry Widow was the name given to the train which left Grand Rapids in the morning and returned to this community in the evening. The other terminal was Virginia. This train got its name not only from the spirit of the times, but also from an actual person. Those were the years of Merry Widow waltzes and Merry Widow hats and Merry Widow this and that. But in Grand Rapids, there did live a widow, and she was Mary." Well, actually, it's kind of a sad story, and she probably wasn't all that merry. "She met the train every evening looking for customers. Thus it was that the Virginia Grand Rapids train got its name, Well, that train was certainly well-known and certainly had a famous name, so it's interesting to see the origin of it at any rate. The train did real business. It used to consist of three or four coaches, usually two baggage and express cars, and from 500 to 700 passengers were carried every day. The Merry Widow continued as a principal train across the range until 1916. So, yes, a little glimpse at some of the women in Grand Rapids and some of the varying activities that they were involved in. Next time, let's get back to the paper mill.